I'll catch you manana. Uncle Sam's only man, packing katanas. Remain anonymous.
Welcome to episode 36 of Upshift, Gen Con 2024. Upshift is No Direction Network's Essence 20 podcast, where every 2 weeks we give you an edge on Essence 20. I'm Ryan Costello, one of the designers of the Essence 20 system, and an author on the G.I. Joe, Transformers, and My Little Pony role-playing game core rulebooks, as well as over a dozen other products from Renegade for the Essence 20 system. Before we begin, although I have worked for Renegade on Essence 20, Upshift is not associated with or produced by Renegade Game Studios, and this is not an official Essence 20 podcast. Now, eagle-eared listeners may have heard that I said before we begin, and might think that once again I've made the mistake, and that, you know, I'm so used to saying we because I've always had a co-host. But no, this time I am not alone in the podcast. I am joined by a guest, by the associate producer of RPGs at Renegade, my co-author on the G.I. Joe role-playing game core rulebook, as well as several other books that we've worked on together, and a co-designer of the Essence 20 system, Mr. Ben Heisler. Hi, Ben.
Hi, it's super great to be here. I'm excited to finally be on the podcast. I know that I've really made it now.
Finally, just some guy you've known for 4 years has invited you onto the podcast that he could have done any time.
I mean, yeah, but I was actually invited this time. And I know you have a bunch of great guests on and talk about a whole bunch of stuff. So it's nice to be here too, especially after Gen Con.
Well, there's where you're wrong. We actually don't usually have guests on Upshift. So this is a very special occasion. We will be talking about Gen Con, which I did not get to go to this year. So I hope to live it vicariously through you and your stories.
You were greatly missed.
You know what? I missed it too, although the number of people that I said that I know that came back and said they tested positive kind of made me think, like, you know what? Maybe it was an okay year to miss.
Yeah, I'm lucky to have avoided it myself.
Yeah, you are. Like, even ICV2 in its Gen Con review, the last bullet point was, let's talk about all the COVID that everyone got. So, You know, still out there. But that's not what we're talking about, Ben. In fact, we're not even talking about Gen Con yet. We'll get to that. But first, people probably, like, they know your name from the credits page, they've seen you on Renegade's YouTube channel, but they don't really know you. So first we'll start a little bit with just, like, what your job is as an associate producer of RPGs, but then I would like to get to know how you got into gaming and then game design.
Yeah, sure. So as the associate producer of RPGs at Renegade, my work is focused on the Essence 20 role-playing game system, which means that I have fingerprints on just about every Essence 20 book, less so on My Little Pony books until recently. So I started off with G.I. Joe with you, which was an amazing experience, and then stuck around and kept being invited to stuff. So there I am. And basically, I do everything nuts to soup. I come up with or work with folks to come up with the adventure, or not the adventure, but the source book outline, and then we take it all the way through finding authors, finding artists, getting writers writing, getting artists artisting, or designing, rather, I guess is the much better way to say it than artists artisting.
I understood.
I mean, yeah, you know, but so yeah, and then all the way through layout, and then eventually we do the back of book copy and help sales and marketing get the words out. And so I get to every day get to have fun adventures in bringing My Little Pony, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Power Rangers, and soon coming Welcome to Night Vale games to the people that love them. So
I'm excited to talk about Welcome to Night Vale a little bit later, but I do want to bring up, you talked about how until recently you weren't really working on My Little Pony. My Little Pony kind of had a weird shift in who was in charge of it, because when it first started, it was me, Elisa, and Trivia were working on the book, and Elisa and Trivia were full-time Renegade employees, and so it was the regular Essence 20 team. Mm-hmm. And then when both of them left around the same time from Renegade, suddenly My Little Pony became its own space, and it only has recently really been brought back into, like, the same fold as the rest of the Essence 20 books.
Yep, that's a good way to take a look at it. Andrew Peregrine, who has worked on very, very many different role-playing game sources or other source books and productions, recently did a whole bunch of stuff for Modiphius for Dune, has been our lead point of contact for My Little Pony, and has been great to work with.
So how come it didn't start on your plate and then eventually did land in your lap?
So exciting, fun times. I was hired. I was the second, like, I applied, went through the whole interview process, and did not get the job. So in fact, Jason Keeley, who works at Paizo, got the job, and I was brought in to do occasional stuff. This is around the time I started working on Across the Stars and other Power Rangers books. I had already done development for a fair number of projects that were smaller, but this was my first time. They were like, we want you to develop this book. And I said, great, what does that mean in terms of you? Like, what do you want me to do as part of this development? Just to, so. But eventually, Jason left, and then Power Rangers and G.I. Joe specifically were put onto my plate. At that point, Andrew was, I believe, already the point of contact on My Little Pony and had planned out the next couple source books. And then eventually I was handed Transformers for the most part. There are still other Transformers projects that are not within my grasp, which is, I'm happy to see how other people do it. But recently My Little Pony has been transitioning into my area of expertise as we work on the Welcome to Night Vale backer kit Kickstarter crowdfunding event.
I don't know if you remember this, but I didn't hear that you had been hired by Renegade. And so Jason had arranged like a just kind of a pre-launch meeting for the first Factions and Actions book. And ahead of that meeting, I was told to put together an outline and gather up some authors for it. And so I did. And then the meeting starts and you're there too. And I'm like, I didn't talk to Ben about writing on this book, and I've already more or less assigned all the words. So this is going to be, I'm going to have to figure it out. So yeah, halfway through the meeting, and when we start talking about authors, I'm like, Ben, like, what would you like to work on this? And that's when you explained, oh no, I'm not here as an author. I'm here. I'll be taking over the development and the production of it. So, you know, surprise, but also like concern and then a relief all in one gasp.
You were relieved that you didn't have to tell me that you didn't have space for me on your book. I hear how it is.
No. Yeah, I was relieved that I didn't have to, because I would have had to give up my words. Like, I wouldn't have taken it away from the freelancers. And I was looking forward to talk about Tiger Force and all of the mini factions that were in that book.
A great book. So I'm glad that y'all did.
I like it very much, too. I wasn't fishing for a compliment, though.
I mean, look, you don't have to fish for a compliment. I will just hand them out.
I'll take them.
I appreciate you and your work. So, like, if you thought this was a tough crowd, like, you're in the wrong stadium, friendo. We love you here.
So before you got into game design professionally and producing RPGs, like, how did you get into gaming to begin with?
So when I was but a wee child, my dad got me the, like, classic D&D Monster Manual and Player's Handbook and DM's Guide. And this was all advanced time period. So I got those and was just like, oh, cool, fantasy books. And they have a bunch of numbers in them. And somehow math plus imagination equals fun times. But I was very lucky to, at the time, my neighbor, who was a couple years older than me, his older brother was super into D&D. And so he ran a couple games for us. And then we realized that at we were young and we wanted to go on fanciful adventures. And when you have somebody who is in college running adventures for you, where perhaps the interests were not properly aligned.
Yeah.
So we learned most of the basics and then we were like, we're going to go do our own stuff. Thanks. And then kind of from there, it kept growing. Once I had played and started to understand things, I started to do game design as a hobby, like, not having any idea what I was doing, but like, oh, I have these books and I like how they're laid out and how the rules work and I want to try to apply that to other things. And so I probably, if I could dig back, if I claw back the hard drives of the computers of my youth, they would probably be full of very bad manuscripts for various properties. But yeah, I got into that, and then also around the same time got into Magic, which I've recently gotten back into. So start them young. It's my advice.
So I believe we're around the same age, and it sounds like we got into it around the same time, just with you saying Magic the Gathering, that kind of places it in the timeline. So when I first got into role-playing games, my mom's reaction was like, oh no, like, don't go asking for blood sacrifices to level up and stuff. Like, the Satanic Panic had cooled down. It wasn't like people regularly talking about it. But if you brought up role-playing games, it was still around the time where people were like, wasn't that a devil thing? So it sounds like you had a very much an opposite reaction to that.
I did, except for, like, occasionally it would be like, oh, I'm really into this book that I'm reading. I'm going to take it to school. And then it'll be, one time it was the player's handbook. It's like, we don't, you shouldn't be reading things like that. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'll read the GM guide instead. or like the time I brought in like the early Monster Manual, which had boobs.
Yeah.
And
Monster Manuals had boobs right into third edition. I don't know how that was always something that they just, they were scraping the PG-13 with that one exception.
Yeah.
Occasionally, like, it was weird.
So I did that, and of course I'd have my parents come and pick me up with the book, and why am I reading such salacious books in school? thankfully my dad had done some amount of playing games, and so he was like, oh, this is not that. And he didn't have the whole figure about enough of it to defend me and encourage me to keep playing games and to continue to figure out systems and stuff like that. So also the man responsible for getting me most of my G.I. Joe figures.
Yeah, it's like a very important person in your life.
Yes. Set me up with games, set me up with G.I. Joe, set me up with all kinds of important life skills.
And really quick, because I do want to get into the Gen Con, but then how did you transition from a hobbyist to a professional?
Sure. This was mostly due to Baldman Games, who runs a bunch of D&D events, or runs D&D at events, such as Gen Con, Gamehole Con, Winter Fantasy, you name it. They're probably the people that are running D&D stuff there. Paige and I had gotten together, and one of the earlier Adventurers League rules was that if you play through, there's a set of adventures that come out, and each of those is tied to a story arc that is based around something that happens in whatever the newest book that came out was.
Okay.
So, for instance, if you, all the Storm King's Thunder adventures were all about giants and fighting giants or trying to restore the events that happened in that book, but was just like, hey, if you want to play the book using the Adventurers League rules, that counts towards your getting magic items, getting experience, getting all that stuff. And so what Paige and I realized was that we, just like many, many other people in Atlanta, ain't got the time to do a whole book in anything that would be approaching time that I would be able to use that character. And so what we started to do was we started to run events where we would take large sections of the book and modify them to run in a weekend so that you could say, I've experienced the entirety of this adventure in two slots Friday, three slots on Saturday, and two slots on Sunday. And so it got into be like, hey, what can we cut and what can we do to make this still be true to the story? And then we ended up getting noticed by the Adventurers League people because we're the only people that are doing it. We got invited to, told like, hey, this is a great idea, continue that outreach. Hey, we're letting some people have sections of the world to write adventures in. We would like to hand you a section because you keep running these events and coming up with content based off of what we have. And then I was writing and working at EPS, and eventually things at EPS didn't work out, and I was able to transition to basically close to full-time game design freelancing, running around and begging people I knew for jobs, as it normally goes. And then I ended up on the G.I. Joe team, and here we are.
All right, I know I wanted to transition to Gen Con, but is there any fun details there? Like, how did you specifically end up getting in touch with Renegade, or vice versa? Did they get in touch with you?
So the funny story is that Paige, my much more talented wife, she was also doing a bunch of the same stuff, as I said earlier, with designing conventions and events to use this content that most people weren't seeing except for in their game group over a long period of time. And she got invited to be on Uncaged, which was an adventure anthology that spawned many more adventure anthologies. That was all by women designers. And it was kind of about reclaiming stories around monstrous women to show the other side of the coin. And she actually won an Emmy for that. And that attracted various attention. She worked on a couple of Wizards of the Coast projects. And eventually her name got into Elisa's sphere of influence. And she was invited. And she said, well, I won't do it without my husband, who writes all the good stuff, which is totally lies, guys. It's totally lies. And then I ended up on G.I. Joe. So, were it not for my better half being the better half, I would still probably be running around trying to get freelance gigs.
Well, I've always appreciated just your partnership with Paige. It seems like you two really look out for each other. And anytime you're together, like whenever we have a group Zoom call, you've got each other's back. You've got just a fun way of bouncing off each other, which, you know, you would expect. But still, it's nice to see.
Yeah, it's nice to be, too. It takes work. But Gen Con.
All right. So we're going to focus on Essence 20 at Gen Con, although I do have a couple of questions. You know, we can't not talk about how HeroScape was, because it seems to be one of the biggest news stories out of Gen Con, like not just Renegade specific, but it was one of the main events of Gen Con. Woo-hoo. But this is an Essence 20 podcast. We're both really deep in the Essence 20 trenches. So how was Essence 20?
I'm not a HeroScape expert.
Can you just explain the whole game to me and the world and the lore?
No.
Okay, moving back to Essence 20 then. How was Essence 20 at Gen Con?
So Essence 20 did really well at Gen Con. We had the same size booth, which if you've been to Gen Con before, we have a really big booth coming like just inside one of the large entrances. We had it built up into four sections this time. One side was mine, which was Essence 20 and also the deck building games. We had our Avalon Hill offerings, we had World of Darkness, and then of course we had HeroScape, which we'll get to in a bit. But we had really good spots on the edge to catch wanderers by. We had some high placement, especially for Field Guide, which was celebrating its Emmy Award win at the show. And then also for My Little Pony, because it is a popular thing for people to stop by and go, they made a My Little Pony role-playing game. Can you believe that? And so we get a lot of conversation that way. It's a thick rule book, but it's a great way to get into gaming in general. It has really sparkly dice. And also a bunch of the core books. So that was really good to welcome more players to join us in Saturday morning Cartoon Land.
All right, so I do want to talk about the field guide. And I'm specifically curious. It wasn't up for an Emmy. It won an Emmy. It was a judge's spotlight. Right. And so we were going into Gen Con already knowing this book was an Emmy winner. But I'm curious if the Emmys being Friday night kind of like cuts Gen Con in two, if you saw any difference in attention to the field guide after the ceremony, where people really got to see that the field guide, you know, people that were not closely watching the nominations and were just waiting for the winners to be announced, if you saw a difference in how the field guide was treated before and after the Emmys.
I would say there were certainly more people that were interested in the field guide, especially on Saturday and some on Sunday. People were definitely attracted by, we had a copy of it out with the medal on one of our front glass displays. And then we also had you get a medal and then you get a shiny piece of paper. It turns out shiny pieces of paper are great at attracting crowds. So we put our shiny piece of paper up next to the field guide and we got a whole bunch of questions about it. At Gen Con, usually you're kind of dealing with two audiences, one of which is the people that are here and they wanna play games and they don't know anything, which is great. Perfect people to introduce to the world. For people to say, hey, go try out one of our games. Let me tell you how it works, all that stuff. And then we have the hardest core of the hardcore that have all of the stuff. And unfortunately with Field Guide, it is one of those books that the hardcore players have already got it. And the new players, you go, well, so in addition to being a crossover book, it's a DM book, because it's got tons of really good DM information that kind of come from the synthesis of all of its authors who have played all sorts of systems coming together and bringing that advice to the table for Essence 20. But then they're like, oh, well, I really want to play Power Rangers. It's like, well, great, this is full of Power Rangers information, but also Transformers and G.I. Joe stuff. And then they're like, well, I don't know that I want to run Transformers yet. I don't know that I want to run G.I. Joe yet. So it's a bit of a tough sell. That said, it did get more attention, and I was really happy about that. A lot of people enjoyed approaching it from a, here's a crossover and GM guidebook, as opposed to how we've previously marketed it as fully crossover. So it felt good to have more eyes on it and more people picking it up.
Just double checking. Okay, so it was James S. was the judge that gave it the spotlight. He had reached out to me on Blue Sky because I had posted that we were nominated, and he cleared up. No. You won. The way judges' spotlights work is that the judges look at anything that didn't get nominated and say, but wait, that's not fair. This needs to be acknowledged in some way. And it was really cool that the Field Guide was one of the books that got that shine.
Yeah, it was fantastic. That's great. I'm glad you knew that, because I was just, it was like, oh, do we get to go up and speak? Do we, like, what happens with these things? Because it's not a regular any, but it's also not a regular any, so.
It's an any that you can prepare ahead of time because you know you're giving that speech.
I found out I was making that speech Friday, like, mid-afternoon.
And
I was
cool.
That said, hugely thankful to everyone. The speech is available online, and I told that it was good. I haven't had the courage to watch it yet, so.
You know what? I really appreciate that you posted it online, because I was curious what you were going to say and how that presentation went, and it went very well.
Aw, thank you.
Now, some of the other books specifically I want to talk about, one of them is Intercontinental Adventures. It kind of got a pre-release, like the whole shipment isn't done printing yet, so Renegade got whatever they could to Gen Con to kind of have it have some kind of presence there. So what kind of attention did it get?
Well, I think we had a couple cases of the book there, and they were gone by early Friday afternoon.
So a couple of cases, we're talking there were dozens of books there, not even hundreds.
Oh, not even hundreds. No, yeah. It was, I want to say, I think we maybe had 40 books. Wow. So it was not a whole lot for the preview. And they flew away very quickly. And a lot of people were super excited to see it, and were really, like, the number of people that I heard from that are so incredibly happy that we have brought the Arashikage to the G.I. Joe role-playing game was fantastic to hear. And we knew that it was a very important thing for us to do, but we needed to make sure we did it right. And you and your team did a fantastic job on that.
Honestly, so I barely touched that chapter. That was mostly Jeremy Bloom. Blum, and I as much as I love everyone that I worked on with that book, man, what Jeremy did with that chapter was really exciting to me. Like, when I was reading it over, as he was turning it over, I was like, oh, he gets exactly why I love this part of G.I. Joe's lore and why I think it's such an important part of it, even though, you know, it's a military fantasy and here's this big chunk of martial arts that's just kind of stuck in there. Yep. But yeah, no, he got exactly the tone we were wanting to. He did his research. He wrote the story well. And I can't wait for more people to get this book in their hands, specifically to see what Jeremy did with it. All right. Now, I've got Knights of Canterlot on the list here. And you've added to the outline that you didn't get any of it. But the Z-Mage on Discord got it in their pre-orders. And that's why, like... So just go on. What happened?
So I amusingly, I just said that I have a better idea of what's going on with My Little Pony. I do not have any idea what's going on with that. As far as I knew, my boss and producer of RPGs at Renegade, Kevin Schluter, had the only copy, and that's why we had one in the display case. So when Z-Man on Discord was like, it was there for me, I was just like, wait, what? But... Great.
Yeah, it was one of the first pictures I saw from Gen Con was Z-Mage saying, I picked up Intercontinental Adventures and Knights of Canterlot. I was like, Knights of Canterlot? How? What? Apparently nobody knows.
Not me. But I do know that Kevin brought back his copy, so there must have been two.
I feel like Z-Mage got the one that was supposed to be for the display, and that's why Kevin had to bring in his copy.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's my only theory.
I wish I had any idea. I'll work with your theory, though. That sounds great.
All right, so those are the specific books I wanted to talk about. Now I just want to know the core rule books. SN20 is a couple of years old now. Each of the core rule books has been at least one Gen Con. So yep. How were they selling this time? What was the reaction to them this time?
So, as I mentioned, My Little Pony is shiny, and a lot of people wander by and go, "Hey, they made a My Little Pony role playing game." So we did sell a lot of those. We also sold a lot of G.I. Joe core rule books, more nice. Than I thought we would. And I think that was the second most sold core rule book after My Little Pony, with Transformers and Power Rangers trailing behind pretty close. But I especially want to take a moment to give a shout out to the Wrecking Crew, who does all of our demos. They ran over 200 SN20 adventures and introduced the games to a ton of people. And they're great partners, and we had a lot of people that said, "I was interested, I wouldn't play the game, I came back, and I want to buy everything now." And that's always a great sign, right? Like, it's when you know you got them, and when you made something that people love.
200 adventures, like, how many tables were running at a time?
I went to the room where they were at, and I think they had 16 or 20 tables.
Okay, wow, still.
They weren't all running SN20 all the time.
Right.
They also were doing World of Darkness demos for us. So.
All right, before we move on to the gaming, any other products that just kind of stood out as well-received at the booth, SN20 specifically?
There is, and we'll get to this here in a minute. There's a lot of excitement for Night Vale. So,
oh, good.
That was the other thing that we were happy to hear, especially since it's a SN20 game as well.
All right, well then, you know what? We'll move that up on the outline, and we'll talk about Night Vale before we talk about gaming.
Oh, all right, fine. I don't know what I can tell you about Night Vale other than it's coming to Backer Kit in October. It's an SN20 game, and we'll play nice with ponies, Joes, Transformers, and Power Rangers. That I can promise you.
Well, I know that like it was announced a year ago, and it just SN20 was never attached to any of the promotional material. And I knew fairly early on that this was going to be an SN20 product, which excited me because this would be the first time we're out of Hasbro, the first time we're not dealing with a, you know, we'll call them kids' properties. I'm not saying that disparagingly. I love a lot of kids' properties. Night Vale is not a kids' property.
A lot of the feedback we would get at the booth would be like, "I love everything Renegade makes. You cover my childhood," and they point to the SN20 stuff, "and my time in college and figuring out who I was," and then pointing to the vampire hunter and werewolf stuff. And so it's just funny that a lot of people have really good memories from those periods of playing with those games and those properties. And Night Vale is going a whole different direction. I'm excited by it.
Do you have any insight into why it wasn't adapted to World of Darkness? It just feels like thematically that's closer to what Night Vale is as a show, even though it's, you know, comedic.
I was brought on when it was already in SS20, and yes, I don't know anything about the development or the genesis of the system. You probably know more about that side of it than I do.
So Carlos is, I believe, the lead designer on it. And yep. He reached out to me very early on, just looking for broad tips about designing for SN20. And that was it. Like, we've chatted since then, but rarely actually talking about mechanics and stuff. We're just chatting about being excited about Welcome to Night Vale. Because after it was announced, I started listening to the podcast. And so I was really getting into the podcast. He really knew his stuff. So we were having some fun conversations about that. So for anyone that is interested, I can tell them that the Glass Cannon Network released three videos related to Welcome to Night Vale. One of them was an interview with Carlos, one of them was a character creation video, and then one of them was a 2-hour actual play session of Night Vale. So there is content out there. So if you are curious about how Welcome to Night Vale adapts to Essence 20, or just like how it works as a role-playing game, they have those videos. I'll probably link them in the show notes for this episode.
That sounds great. I would love to check those out as well.
All right, let's talk about games. Specifically, Worlds Collide, the Pony Puzzle. Now, when I was bringing you on, my question was going to be, did you happen to stumble into the room while it was playing? And then in talking with Jordan, who I thought was going to be the MC of it, he said, no, Ben was the MC. Ben ran the whole event. So even better, Ben, tell me about running Worlds Collide, the Pony Puzzle.
Yeah, no, Jordan came to me, I think, right after you had said you weren't going to be at Gen Con and was like, hey, we need somebody to run the Worlds Collide event. And I'm like, I've run Epics before. Sure, let's do this.
I got to pause and say, that is a really weird Jordan impression.
I mean, it's probably not a very good Jordan impression because it wasn't meant to be one.
But, okay, great. Carry on.
But yeah, no, he was like, hey, can you do this? And I said, yes. He's like, do you need an audio system? And I said, no, I can be loud. So the event itself was great. It ran smoothly. I got to stand up on chairs and read your narration with funny voices and with hand gestures, and everybody seemed to enjoy that. I certainly did, at least. The highlights were people loved going to all the different zones and exploring. Like, it saddens me that there's not an opportunity for me to look forward to standing up on chairs and going, and Megatron, chewing all the scenery as much as you can. But it was great. We had a GM that actually built a Megatron.
Yeah, Lucas. He built the Lord Mindwaves last year, and he built two Megatrons this year. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Lucas is amazing. I love him.
Yeah, it's crazy good work. It was that. How much do we want to get into this? Because I don't want to
spoil the actual thing. I am curious. Part two is straight up a puzzle. And that is something that is like, feels thematic for My Little Pony. Puzzle was in the name, but I've never seen just a full room handling a puzzle semi-cooperatively like it had been written out. So how did that work?
It worked out well. We had one table get two of the puzzles really quickly, and then some of the tables headed out, and then we had two tables that stood back, and like, it was interesting. They got the first one, it took them a while to get the first one, but then the second one was only a couple minutes after that, and then the third one was maybe 8 or 10 minutes after that, and then they were off exploring the different parts of Equestria and all kinds of cool stuff. But it was a hit. Like, nobody was like, I don't want to do puzzles. which I have been that person, so I greatly respect that mindset. I'm not that person anymore, though. So if I design something that has puzzles in it, sorry, I'm past that phase. I thought the puzzle went really well. The following section of exploration and facing different areas, and can I say cutified enemies?
Yes.
I think that was in the description. Okay. And facing the various cutified enemies and allies. And the players loved it. I mean, much like any of your other work, it went off without a hitch, was tons of fun, and everybody loved it.
That's so great. I was just concerned that if anything was going to grind the whole room to a halt, it was going to be the puzzle. So I'm glad that it went pretty smoothly. I actually consulted with Jason on just fine-tuning it, because Jason loves doing puzzles. Jason Keeley, who we talked about earlier. Yeah. And so I was like, I've got this idea for a puzzle. It's about unscrambling pun names of characters from the different properties, and you may have a whole table who knows nothing about G.I. Joe, and not only do they have to identify two G.I. Joe characters, but also what their bona fide names would be. And so he gave me a couple of pointers of like how to broaden the puzzle so that even if you don't know this stuff, you could kind of stumble into it just by like decoding things. And anyway, without going into further mechanics, he elevated that puzzle, and I was a lot less worried after I'd gone over it, because I really didn't want to scrap that concept. I really felt like it was a key component in separating it from last year's Worlds Collide.
Yeah, and it certainly made it feel a lot more in tune with being in Equestria than, you know, the traditional more action elements of there's bad guys, we're gonna go get them.
Now, for the read aloud text for the MC, I did write it as though I was running it, even though I knew I wouldn't be running it. And so I didn't want to just have a single pony voice. I wanted the whole cast of the main six to have more or less equal showing in there, which is asking a lot for, I didn't even know who would be running it, to not only have a good pony voice, but to have six different good pony voices that fans of My Little Pony would recognize which character they were supposed to be playing.
I do not have those voices, but okay. I was loud and I was enthusiastic and people laughed. And from there, I can just feel good about myself.
All right. I'm glad.
But yeah, I mean, people love the cutified names. They love the encounters. They said I did a great job reading your words, so I'll take it.
We can move on a little bit to Heroescape, just from someone who was at the Renegade booth. Not really working the Heroescape section, I assume. You were basically a fly on the wall. What is it like being a fly on the wall to the Heroescape reception?
So, amusingly, as you and other people may have seen before, Renegade's booth kind of has a cube in the center that helps each face of the cube divides the sections of... And so my section was on the opposite side of the cube from Heroescape. So I did not see a whole lot, but I heard a whole lot. I saw the huge reception. We've heard so many great things from people, but like on Thursday, the line for Heroescape was like around, like all the way around the booth. No one that was in line, unfortunately, that wrapped around my section wanted any role-playing game books, or because I had a nice captive audience. So they sold out of the Painted Master set, which is kind of the premium starter sets. It has a huge amount of terrain. It has a whole wide variety of figures. It comes in two varieties, both painted, which is the more expensive version, and then unpainted, so you can do it yourself. But we sold out of the Painted Master set in 3 hours on Thursday, which was super impressive and great work for our great work to our Heroescape team. And I'll send you some pictures about this as well for, but like they created all these like 7 and 8 tile deep maps that were around that were just these incredibly epic Heroescape maps with like long plunging waterfalls and all kinds of stuff. They also had in the open gaming, not open gaming, but in the organized play area, we had tables upon tables with like matching set after set after set for you to come in and learn how to play the game or come in for the tournament. We had a huge tournament for the 20th anniversary celebration that was at 100 players. It is the largest Heroescape tournament on record.
Nice.
So we got to do that. And I'm sure we're only going to do more next year. And as I mentioned a little bit, we had demos in both the exhibit hall. We had a table set up with a couple demos there. We had a whole demo room that was full of Heroescape, and we had a whole bunch in the organized play area, and ran over 1,000 demos of Heroescape, which that's a big number.
That is a big number. I thought 200 was a big number.
I thought 200 was a big number too, until I saw the Heroescape numbers and I was like, oh, that's a lot. So yeah, it was really cool. And it was great. Like, it was great to see the people that had been involved earlier and then had kind of like still played the game during the fallow period and then had tried to see the rise of crowdfunding and then that fell and then we brought it back. And a lot of people were just in love with seeing the game back and seeing more people playing it and wanting to play with those new pieces. And it was just this great outpouring from the community that hadn't been served in a long time. And so that was super cool.
Now I also, heard... Oh, yes.
Oh, good.
I wonder if we're both going to the same point.
Are we talking about the huge statues?
No, I was going to. I heard G.I. Joe was coming to Heroescape.
That I know nothing about.
Okay. I don't know if it was an announcement or a rumor or something somebody said. People started talking about it on Discord.
My answer to basically anything Heroescape is, I don't know about that, but I'm sure it'll come up soon.
So the statues. Tell me about the statues.
Yeah, so we had a couple of these like life size statues for two of the heroic characters at the booth. One was Raylan, and the other one is a demon lady with wings and a big axe.
That's such an evocative name.
I know, right? I bet I could find it, but not before it would be awkward time on a podcast. So we're
people aren't here for the Heroescape stuff. So this is just, they were probably curious. They wanted to hear a little bit about it. I think it's a good time to move on and to wrap things up, unless there's any other Gen Con highlights you want to talk about, or if there's anyone you want to shout out to.
I mean, my highlight, I will definitely say, was emceeing the event. You made it super easy. It was a ton of fun to see players that were just their ultimate mashup of ponies and Joes and Transformers and Power Rangers all together in one space. And the room was just so full of energy for and love for those properties as well. So it was great. That was my main highlights. The second highlight would be winning the Emmy for Field Guide. I have a really cool pen for you that we can maybe preview to people from the Worlds Collide event if they haven't already seen it.
Oh, the pin, yes. It's up on the Discord, but not everyone has seen it.
Yeah. I have one of those for you. Other than that, I mean, Gen Con, the highlight of Gen Con is that it's amazing and terrible, and you just kind of experience it, and you arrive back home missing a week and wondering, how did I get sick this time? But then you have these great memories afterwards about meeting people and sharing the love of games and love of these IPs. So,
well, I still regret missing this year, especially not being at the Ennies. Like, that would have been a great highlight. Like, I may have been on books that have been nominated before, but like, I was one of 40 people and I contributed maybe 1,000 words to it. But the Field Guide is something I really contributed a lot to. So this would have been a really special time to be there to get it in person. Scott tells me I will be receiving an Emmy in the mail, which is exciting.
Oh yeah, yep, definitely. We're making sure that all the folks involved get their copies of the Emmy, because you worked on it, you earned it. Like, you definitely earned on that book.
Yeah, that one was something special to me, and I'm glad that it got that kind of attention. Ben, where can people find you online? That you want to be found.
So I'm a bit of a recluse, but other than that, you can find me as Ben Writes Games on Blue Sky. My Twitter handle that I very rarely use anymore is Zentarum PR, but it's the way to get in touch with me if you want to come find me. And then also I'm on the Renegade Discord at least twice a week answering questions and kind of developing together with the community when we run into questions or when we have opportunities to be like, well, we have three or four different ways we could do about this. What makes the most sense? And we have a wonderful community, and it's great good feedback from those folks as well.
And you know what? It's been exciting to watch. I love whenever you show up and you like usually get like right to the meat of the conversation, and you get the sense that things are happening, that people are given feedback, and you're you're implementing it, and it's making the game better because of it.
I have an hour to get on there, get in, get out. Nobody gets hurt, and I want to get in there and make sure that people both feel heard and feel valued, and that they have a say in these games we love.
Speaking of people feeling valued, I really appreciate you giving your time, Ben, and your insight into how Gen Con 2024. This is a good time to end this podcast.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you for doing this.
Well, as I said earlier, thanks so much for having me on. And I love the work you do, and I love hearing about what you do, even when it's with Voltron and all kinds of other stuff. So keep being awesome, Ryan.
Thanks, Ben. And thank you all for joining us for another episode of Upshift. Before we go, if you would like to know more about the stuff we do at the No Direction Network, you can go to nodirectionpodcast.com, or you can go to patreon.com/nodirection if you'd like to support our work, help us keep the lights on, and help us keep churning out the content that we've been doing for the past 20 years or so. I also want to say thank you to Word Burglar for the use of Letters from Snake Eyes Part 4. You can find out more at wordburglar.com. Until next time, I'm Ryan Costello, and I will see you in 2 weeks for the next episode of Upshift. Myself, told the others don't question it, trust me. Some things are better left unsaid, except my demons that were screaming like the undead. I let them in every day, my main meditation was taking them down, my pain medication. Shanna sighed, and she knew she couldn't call me, at least until I found out what happened to Tommy. That mission was private, for now the objective was stopping the threat of this venomous collective spreading across the globe. I was ready to lock and load with flash, grand slam, clutch, zap, and rock and roll. Hawk, stealer, grunt, breaker, and short fuse. And before I knew, I gained a whole lot more to lose. Accept the fear, don't let it steer you. When you move with the wind, no one can hear you. Fate's your friend one day, the next it takes lives. Assume the worst, but count on Snake Eyes. Commando, what?